Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined right now by nobody, but here in a second, I am going to be joined. We did a crossover episode here with David Rammel of the Locked On Heat podcast. We had a really fun conversation kind of going back and forth on two of the cooler stories, I think, in the sport this year. Miami coming out of nowhere. The Lakers obviously not coming out of nowhere, but overcoming all kinds of adversity to get to where they are right now. And, you know, we talked about how the teams match up a little bit. We talked about some of the LeBron and Miami stuff, which I still, to this point, don't quite understand. I understand it in the sense of, like, he once played there. They won championships together. It ended kind of ugly. But I don't, I would have thought that they did enough winning to be able to move on with their lives. Apparently not. And I think that falls on both sides of that equation. We talk about that in the show. We discuss this whole concept of depth and how apparently I got myself in some hot water with Heat Twitter saying that I think the gap is pretty extensive between AD and Bam for third best player, second and third best player in this series. And, you know, I guess I'll just spend a little bit of time discussing that before we throw to that conversation. And this is where I'll start, basically. The conversation, not just in this series, but in a lot of the series that the Lakers have played in this postseason has been, yeah, they have LeBron and Anthony Davis, but what about this other matchup further down the line of players of import in the series? So yeah, they have LeBron and Anthony Davis, but well, the stuff before the but there is pretty important. And you know, we saw it with Portland where it was, yes, Anthony Davis and LeBron are very good and Anthony Davis matches up really well with the front court, but what are the Lakers going to do about Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and this up and coming Blazers team that is better than your average 8 seed 5-game win. Yeah, Anthony Davis and LeBron James are really good, but how are the Lakers going to match up with Houston's micro ball 5-game series? Yeah, Anthony Davis and LeBron James are really good, but how are the Lakers going to deal with Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, who has been lighting the postseason on fire? 5-game series. And it's not to look down on those other teams. It's just that, like, I really feel like in analysis, it's really easy to talk yourself into something when in media in 2020, the thing that gets you noticed is saying the thing that nobody else is really saying. Finding the thing, finding the take you could talk yourself into that nobody else is saying for the sake of sounding unique. Now, I'm not saying that's the case with everybody, but in 2020, in media, the goal, it seems, is to go viral, right? The goal is to get a soundbite that you get enough people agreeing with, and you get enough people angry at, and there you go. You did your job. And you know what? I'm just as guilty at times as others it with some of this stuff. For the most part, I try to stay away from it. Some of my takes come off as I'm trying to, you know, go viral for saying something unique. But for the most part, my takes are fairly basic. Yeah, I don't overthink things. Nobody has ever accused me of thinking too much about what I'm going to say before I say it. That's for damn sure. But when it comes to where we're at in sports analysis, I just think we're doing a disservice to people. Like, yes, the Heat have Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler and Goran Dragic and Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson. And those guys are playing better basketball consistently than Alex Caruso. KCP is close, I think, with those guys. But they're definitely playing better than Danny Green and Kyle Kuzma and Markieff Morris and on down the line, Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee. Yes, they are playing better than those guys. But what matters here is that Anthony Davis and LeBron James are by far the two best players in this series. And historically speaking, especially when those two guys don't openly hate each other the way that Kobe and Shaq did, the team with the two best players in it tends to win the series. Miami has an incredible story so far this year. It's a really cool kind of statement towards or in favor of work ethic and culture commitment and belief in one another and belief in coaching. It's really cool in that respect. However, the Lakers, you could say a lot of the same stuff about. Yes, they went out and they got lucky because their market and their overall brand attracted LeBron James. And then when he got there, his arrival attracted Anthony Davis. But the conversation surrounding this team was also, well, what else is surrounding? What other players are around them? And you would think, after finishing with the best record in the West, after flying through the postseason and never being pushed beyond five games, you would think that either people would acknowledge how valuable it is to have two players of the caliber of LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and or would maybe give a little bit more credit to guys like KCP, who has played really well this year, guys like Alex Caruso, who on any other team would be considered this great story. Those guys, however, find themselves once again being looked at the reason why the Lakers might lose a series, when their entire job is basically just defend. Don't lose Tyler Hero. Don't lose Duncan Robinson. Force Bam Adebayo and force Jimmy Butler to outscore Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Can you do that? Cool. Lakers have a pretty good shot at winning this thing. Anywho, let's go ahead and throw to this conversation that I had with David Rammel. I thought it was a really fun one. He's very, very good. You're going to want to tune in. One of my favorite things to do, and I'm biased, obviously, working for the Locked On Network, but one of my favorite things to do is go there and listen to some of the shows that fall on the other side of the equation with some of these series. I think in this case, just like with the Nuggets series and just like with the Portland series, I think there's plenty of value there to listen to those shows. So if you want some extra depth to your understanding of the series, check out Locked On Heat. For part B, or I guess it's part A of the conversation here, make sure you check out the Locked On Heat feed for the first 20 minutes of what wound up being about a 40-minute conversation between the two of us. Today's show is brought to you in part by RockAuto.com. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control models and brake pads to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specs, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. The one thing I'm interested in your thoughts on is with, to this point, and this isn't to take away from Miami, but to this point, one of the things that was frankly kind of maddening to watch with Milwaukee and with Boston was kind of the lack of adjustments that you know, Budenholzer and then eventually Brad Stevens were making as coaches. Like even as Bam was fouling out Daniel Tice, it never really felt like it felt like Stevens, the adjustments that he was making there were kind of forced on him by way of Tice's fouling issues. And by the way, like if that's the Bam that if he just goes in, night out, and says, I'm just going to put my head down and get to the bucket, and I'm going to foul out Dwight, I'm going to foul out JaVale, and I'm going to put pressure in terms of fouling with Anthony Davis, then like the more that he closes that gap between him and Davis, that to me is more important than what different role players do over the course of these next seven games. That's the interesting thing that if I were a Heat fan, that's what I'd be watching for the most. But like Frank Vogel has made adjustments against Portland, and then he made adjustments against Houston, and then he made those more adjustments against Denver in winning his five games here. And I'm wondering, like, how many pitches do you think Miami has here is basically my question, because like they took away Milwaukee's 102 mile an hour fastball, which is one of the toughest pitches to hit in the NBA, but they took it away. They started hitting it over the fence, and Milwaukee never developed a curveball or a changeup to be able to counter some of what Miami was doing there. But the Lakers do have a few different pitches that they can throw at Miami. And I'm wondering how you think Miami is suited to deal with the various adjustments that Vogel might be more open to making over the course of the series than the previous coaches he's gone against thus far.
They do have a number of players that are very versatile from the wing position, and that can change things up a lot. And that's, I think, a strength of Miami's. And obviously what, again, led to that decision to trade for Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder is having two additional wing players that can do some things on offense, but more often than not are going to be counted on as far as being offensive players. Now, Iguodala's experience is another X factor. We saw that in Game 6 against the Celtics. I think his experience in guarding LeBron in key situations is also going to be a big part of the series moving forward. I think that's, if anything, that has been a strength, is that you have a number of guys who can kind of fit in. You can go small, you can go big. There were players that were not playable against the Celtics that I think will be playable against the Lakers, namely Kelly Olynyk, maybe even a Myers Leonard, although I sincerely doubt it, just because they're guys that can make, they can stretch the floor considerably. And in Olynyk's case, he's such a great playmaker and passer that I think he can really change things around from an offensive perspective there. So I think there are, we'll see changes. We'll see Spoelstra tinker with the lineups to some degree. He's also very fond of saying, we can only control what we control. We have to focus on our strengths. And right now, this version of the team with this starting lineup, this is what they envision as their most strongest lineup. And so they're going to continue with that. Spoelstra has been willing to make changes much more so than I think over the course of his career. But at the same time, he also wants to focus on his greatest strength, and he doesn't want to revisit anything. He doesn't want to reinvent the wheel this late in the game. So I think given all that, I think they can handle a couple of different pitches, to use your analogy. I think they can do things a little differently, and they'll find ways. I mean, even if it's just Bam, Jimmy, Goran, Andre Iguodala, all of them can initiate offense to some degree. So there's different playmakers there. Even Olynyk, like I mentioned before, there's on offense and defense, they can both, they have such versatility across the board. Now, there's also some players that are clearly one-dimensional, like Duncan, targeted somewhat for his defense, although I think that's improved over the course of the playoffs, and I don't think it's nearly as bad as people expect, but he's always going to be known as being a shooter first and foremost. I think his passing is probably a little underrated. He can put the ball down, although it seems like much more situational than anything else. But, I mean, you mentioned it before. You're concerned about the ability to limit what Robinson can do. And I think that is a huge X factor in the series moving forward. So, I mean, this is a pretty good roster. You probably wouldn't say it's great, although it's been great to cover. It's been great to watch them develop and to form as cohesive a unit as they've become. And I love the fact that when they play beautiful basketball. When they're moving the ball around from Jimmy to Bam to Goron, et cetera, and it results in a wide open three from Duncan Robinson, it is a thing of beauty. And I think that's maybe they're not great from like your typical perspective, but they can be very, very good and fun to watch. And I think that's been really enjoyable. And so I'm curious as well to see how they respond to different, you know, the different math equation that the Lakers present.
Yeah. And the other thing too, that I'm really interested here is like Miami, I think in both of their most recent series, right, against Boston and against Milwaukee, when the chips were kind of really down and when the game was at its most crucial spots, I think this is where teams kind of take on the identity of their best player or their star or whatever, even if that changes night to night with Miami. The team has taken on his identity, and I thought that really served them well against a Milwaukee team that you can kind of see it when the game started slipping away. You could kind of see them go, oh no, not again, right? And against Boston, you saw a team that, while Jason Tatum is going to be a very, very good, very fantastic player over the course of his career, the identity, because he's a more quiet type of player, and yeah, Marcus Smart can yell and flop all he wants, but at the end of the day, the team is going to look at their its best player and figure out what's going to happen next. And I think for the Lakers too, like the Lakers saw that with Portland when, you know, in key moments, it was basically, yeah, our team has LeBron James and your team has, whether it's Damian Lillard or James Harden or Nikola Jokic or, you know, Jamal Murray to a lesser extent, like those other teams that both teams faced, like the Lakers and Heat had sizable, I felt like, mental fortitude advantages given the situations that presented themselves over the course of the playoffs to this point. And I'm really fascinated by how that plays out with both of these teams, where I think Jimmy Butler against LeBron James all time is 27-27 in terms of wins against each other. That's like these remarkable. These guys play, they go at each other, and Jimmy Butler has never had any back down to him whatsoever. LeBron James isn't going to be looking to back down in this situation, given how close he is to winning a championship with the Lakers. And so like that's something that it's completely intangible. It's going to be impossible to define, but it's the kind of thing that you can feel in a game, even if the numbers, it's not the kind of thing that you can just look up on a stat sheet who had bigger balls in this series. It's not the kind of thing that you can define tangibly, but it's the kind of thing you can notice as it's happening.
Today's show is also brought to you in part by DoorDash. Between never-ending laundry cycles and incoming emails, we're all working from home. You've got plenty on your to-do list. Give yourself one less thing to worry about and let DoorDash take care of your next meal. DoorDash is the app that brings your food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurant, and your food will be left at your door. DoorDash deliveries are now contactless to keep communities safe as we all operate as safely as possible. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on the first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off your delivery and zero delivery fees on your first order, but only when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order only with DoorDash.
I did want to ask you something. I know kind of switching topics a little bit here, but I think it's just, at least from a Heat fan perspective, it's something that's a big, Well, it's pressure on everybody's mind. The LeBron versus Miami Heat factor versus Pat Riley versus Eric Spoelstra.
Mm-hmm.
Is revenge really a motivational factor for him at this point? Because I don't think it is. I think it's been overblown somewhat. I know there was maybe some bad blood back in 2014, but I think he's a very different person and player than he was back then. So do you get any sense that he's actually looking forward to facing Miami and taking it to his old team?
It'd be different if it was like Jimmy Butler going up against Minnesota, right?
Sure.
Or Jimmy Butler going up against Philly. Like it would feel a little bit different there than LeBron also has to be realistic here. He probably doesn't win those championships if he doesn't go down to Miami. He learned some very important lessons from Pat Riley on how winning organizations operate. Like those are very important things that he carried back with him to Cleveland and helped him win up there. And then he brought to LA as the Lakers were, especially after Magic Johnson, they were legitimately rudderless. And he kind of said, well, okay, I kind of see the value in what Pat Riley was preaching, even if it was frustrating for me at the time, way back right before he took off. So, I mean, I think just as competitors, like LeBron wants to beat Pat Riley and wants to beat Eric Spoelstra just because they're in his way right now. But I don't think bad blood isn't the way I would kind of look at that. I think he would prefer things have ended differently. I think he rolls his eyes when you talk about, you know, the impact that learning to win in Miami and having to go to Miami to learn to win. He doesn't necessarily enjoy those talking points, but that doesn't make them any less true. And as such, like maybe he wants to dispel some of that and say like, see, look, I was the reason we won down there. But I wouldn't necessarily define that as bad blood. What's the vibe up there with LeBron? Is there bad blood towards him?
I think it's been kind of it's like a scab or maybe even an old scar that's just been kind of reopened now for whatever reason. And I think everybody's kind of revisiting. You treat him well when he comes here. Like Heat fans tend to welcome him and cheer. But there's always kind of an underlying current of animosity because of what he did in 2014, the way he did it. And it was really, yeah. I mean, Zach Lowe did a pretty good job of explaining this. I mentioned this in a recent show. Like the things that he did and the way he did them in 2014, pretty underhanded and understandably so, considering he was trying to build another title contender in the Eastern Conference with another team, even as he was supposedly stringing Miami along. And that's why he was stringing them along, that he was disrespectful to Pat Riley, that he was making calls reportedly to Pau Gasol and telling him, don't join the Heat because I won't be there, etc. So there's a lot of what he did, even his decision to leave in the first place. Like it was insulting to a person he viewed as a friend in Dwayne Wade that he didn't want to necessarily, he didn't think there was a path to winning in Miami anymore, that he thought it was a better path for him to go to Cleveland. And I know he had to clean up his Q rating and he had to clean up his image by going back to the Cavaliers, but he could have done that at a later point of his career. He didn't have to do that in 2014 at its peak.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think there's more reason for Miami Heat fans and the Heat organization to have bad blood towards LeBron than there's reason for LeBron to be pissed at Miami.
Maybe.
If that makes sense. If LeBron was still angry at Miami for, I'd be confused. Now, look, this is also LeBron, and this is kind of how celebrity works, where they are sometimes incapable of seeing their own faults.
Pat Riley congratulating him after he won a championship in 2016 and sending him a text message and not getting a reply back from a person that you thought – you were close to for 4 years and that you had built a strong connection. Now, I mean, then you also look at LeBron's comments following his exodus from Miami, where he said, there were people within this organization I thought I was close to that told me I was making the biggest mistake of my life. And that was a motivation factor. And clearly a shot at Pat Riley, although I think Riley's denied it, but I mean, what's Riley going to say at this point? So
yeah,
I think there is some animosity there. I mean, there was the fact that Pat Riley in a postseason press conference revealed that LeBron's wife was pregnant with their daughter at the time. I mean, that was something that LeBron had only mentioned to a few people within the organization. He didn't want it made public knowledge just yet. You know, there was a lot of different things going on that summer in 2014, not to mention Dwayne's health and concerns about Chris Bosh being a superstar and whether or not you could retool, the fact that, you know, he asked basically Miami to sign certain players and draft Shabazz Napier and all these little things that LeBron did that come across as somewhat Machiavellian. And yes, absolutely, I can see Miami being, you know, very angry towards LeBron, even though they've said publicly that it's not that big a deal. But conversely, I think LeBron probably still has some issues, even if right now, if you're telling me that he rolls his eyes every time he hears that he learned how to win in Miami, which I still think is 100% correct. That's pretty telling to me, is that he's tired of hearing that. It's like, well, you know, he was a very, very good player before he came to Miami. I don't think he was necessarily good enough to help carry a team to a championship. He hadn't been, obviously, and I also think that he understood or learned how to implement culture and how to facilitate team building and things of that sort. Again, things that he did not know how to do prior to coming to Miami. So, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. I know that narrative is probably going to be beaten down over the next few days, but I think it's one of the more interesting ones, even if it's already been blown out of proportion.
Yeah, I think in all of these cases, you have guys, the most competitive people in the world, you know, whether it's LeBron, Pat Riley, Dwayne Wade, and so on and so forth. And as parts of this equation and part of that drama, you have some pretty sizable egos across the board here. And what happens, what comes with the territory with egos of that size is they don't always look at things completely unbiased. They aren't as capable of finding where they screwed up, you know. Yeah. And I think whether it's the stuff you're talking about that LeBron might hold against Pat Riley, I mean, if I were a Heat fan, the fact that he forced or asked Miami to draft Shabazz Napier, like, that'd be enough in and of itself to hate him forever. But I just think for the purpose of like winning a championship here and what's driving him here, I think all of this stuff is a little further down the list than people might think from LeBron's perspective. And when you're looking at like reasons that the Lakers want to win this year, like it starts with Kobe, you know, beyond the individual, like just wanting to win a championship.
Sure.
Like if you're looking for storylines and things that are driving the Lakers in this situation, winning the year that the organization, the city, the world lost Kobe, like that's what's, you know, kind of driving them beyond just, hey, we're here, we may as well win it while we're here.
All good points. I mean, I don't know. I feel like we haven't really gotten to the nuts and bolts, and maybe it's impossible to do so because, again, we don't know exactly what's going to happen on the court. We can guess, we can look at film and things of that sort. But I think just stepping away from it for a little bit, the narratives around this series, it's the NBA Finals. There is no greater, more dramatic event in basketball than what's going to happen over the next week or two. So I don't know if there's anything else that you necessarily want to cover on the court, off the court, but I think we've done a pretty good job of showing some of the, again, the stories that are going to make this such a fun series.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing that, like, the really fun thing about any series is the way that you see it evolve night to night, game by game. And at this one, watching it evolve in the analysis evolve in the days leading up to this and the narratives that are being kind of thrown out there about the series and about this matchup, it's all a blast, man. This is, when you consider, as you said earlier, as you talked about earlier with Myers Leonard, when you consider that it seemed likely to some that there was not going to be basketball again this year. And the fact that we're getting it, and we're getting it now with this really cool matchup with one of the better stories in the sport that we've seen in a long time, with how Miami has gotten to this point
And now with the Lakers, you know, they were kind of mocked when they were put together. I myself mocked the fact that they went with Dwight Howard and Rajon Rondo as the pieces to surround LeBron James. But, you know, the fact that the Lakers are now here and can kind of send Kobe off per se with this win, tying the Celtics, the fact that the Heat went through the Celtics, a team that, like, while Lakers fans hate Celtics, the Celtics also, you know, as one would expect, the Heat aren't, I listen to Levitard as often as I can. And it seems to me Miami really hates Boston. So any city that hates Boston, I find it a really hard time hating.
That's a good point. Maybe we should just break it up there. I think we can come together despite the outcome of this series in our hatred of the city of Boston.
Exactly. That's what we're all here for. I'm sure we'll talk again over the course of the series and given the different turns and swings that we're going to see here. So I'm looking forward to it, man. This is as LeBron said, as after the Lakers won the other night against Denver, this isn't the kind of thing that happens every year for everybody. So I'm, you know, while I'd obviously prefer to see the Lakers win this one, I'm also going to really make it a point to just enjoy this, because it doesn't happen all the time.